Well, within a striking distance of Purim, just a couple of weeks away, and as we normally have two sessions on Purim before Purim itself, I mean, this time in 2 weeks' time will be Purim. There will be no shir on that Monday night for various reasons, which I think should be more or less self-understood. And therefore, we begin our preparations this evening. And the first of our shiurim will be devoted to Megillas Esther. And we have been following the Megillah for the last number of years. We are this evening met with Perek Dalet. And we'll be guided, as we have been in the earlier prokim, by the classic Perush Yosef Lekach of Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi. It's the Perush that, in a sense, really opened up the Megillah. The Vilna Gaon and the Malbim both based their Perush on him, as did many others. And Perek Dalet, I think it's fair to say, is not one of the happier prokem of the Megillah. It's not yet La Yehudim Ha'Isa'ora. Very few of the Purim songs are based in Perek Dalet of Megillas Esther. It's actually the difficult times, what to do, about the Gezeirah of Haman. And important to appreciate this perek in the sense that the less we really identify with the depth of trouble that the Jewish people were in, the less we'll appreciate the Hatzalah when it came. And therefore, the psukim that are sung to the tune of Eicham, they should not become the highlights of the Megillah. But nonetheless, certainly we need to give it due attention. A person who doesn't really appreciate Evel Gadol LaYehudim as it was meant to be will not fully appreciate Simcha V'Sason LaYehudim when it finally happened. And we begin at the beginning, and as we will see, a number of the Yesodos in the Perek are really building on foundations that have been set in earlier Prokim. We'll remind ourselves of them and see how this Perek develops them and echoes them. And so, what has happened? The decree of Haman has gone out, and Pasuk Aleph reads, "Umordechai yada es kol asher na'asa." Mordechai knows everything that happened, and he responds with alarm. "Vayikra Mordechai es begadav." He tears his clothing. "Vayibasak ve'efer." He wears the sackcloth and the ashes. "Vayetzei b'socha ir." He goes out to the middle of the city. "Vayizak zaka ugdola umara." And lets out an almighty bitter cry, which pretty much got everyone's attention. And that really, of course, was the goal. What we need to ask in terms of Parshanut is, what does the pasuk mean when it says, "Mordechai yada es kol asher na'asa"? Mordechai knew everything. What is everything? What does Mordechai know that other people don't know? And know this. Well, we should know that the Medrash Rabbah does say that Mordechai was informed by Eliyahu HaNavi, and therefore that's how he knows. So if you're Mordechai, you can be informed by Eliyahu HaNavi, and you can know things that otherwise would be not known to people. But in terms of Parshanut, there is a way to understand, as the Yosef Lekach will explain. In Pasuk Gimel, if moving ahead just to build up the issues here, Pasuk Gimel reads of v'chol medina, in every state, mekom asher dvar melech v'daso magia, the place where the king's word and law reaches, evel gadol la'yudim v'tzom u'b'chi u'misbeit. So there was great mourning for the Jewish people. The question is, Pasuk Gimel describes every v'chol medina u'medina, every state, mekom asher dvar melech v'daso magia, every place where the king's law reaches. Well, the king's law reaches every state because he was the king of every state. And the edicts were sent out to every state, as is outlined in the end of Perek Gimel. And therefore, what does the pasuk mean by qualifying and elaborating that in every state that the king's law reached, that is every state because his law reached every state? Were there medinos where the king's law did not reach? No. Secondly, the The way that the pasuk describes these places is Mekom Asher Devar HaMelech V'daso Magia, where the king's word and his law reached. And the question very simply is, what is the king's word and what's the king's law? What's Dvar HaMelech and what's Das HaMelech? We understand they're largely the same thing, but the pasuk has made mention of two things. And therefore, Yosef Lekach explains, and this is based on an explanation that he established in Pasuk Gimel, based on the psukim there, that actually Haman took pains to conceal the actual plan to destroy the Jewish people from the Jewish people, and in fact from everyone, from almost everyone, that is to say, he did not wish to have the Jewish people time to prepare, to defend themselves, to take some type of evasive action to avert it. And that's why there were actually two sets of letters that were sent out. The letters that were sent out, and this, as he demonstrates from the psukim, the letters that were sent out to the people at large said very enigmatically, Lihios asidim layom hazeh, be ready for the 13th of Adar. That's all it said. This was a message that went out, Lios Asidim Layom Hazeh. Ready for what? Didn't say. But you just had to be ready. Everyone had to cancel all their appointments for that day, be ready for whatever was to come. But it didn't say what. It was only the words that we are familiar with, Lashmi, Larog, Lavedas, Kol Yehudim, that is a separate letter that was sent out specifically to the officials of the places. They were privy to this information. Elachashtapane HaMelech, Velapachos, Velasarim, to all of these officials, they knew. But that's a very small circle. And indeed, it's for that reason that as the Perek Gimel concludes with the words Ha'ir Shushan Navocha. The city of Shushan was Navocha. Navocha means perplexed or confused. As if to say, even Shushan, in greater Shushan, is to say, people didn't know what it was about. So it's a strange message. And they'd never heard anything like it before. You receive this message, be prepared. Doesn't say for what, just simply confused. No one knew what the whole thing was about. And interestingly, that's a pasuk where the minhag is also to read it in the Eicha tune, although being confused is not yet being in a state of mourning. In a sense, there would be room to say that Da'ir Shushan Navocha is just confused. For some people, being confused is worse than being in mourning, but no one actually knew at that time. However, Mordechai knows. And the reason why Mordechai knows is because there's one piece of information, as we'll see, that Haman was unable to conceal from Mordechai. Firstly, important again to establish, Mordechai operates in an area where most Jews do not operate, and that place is called Shushan HaBira. This is an idea which is developed by Rabbi Reuven Margolius in a Sefer HaMikra Ba'Masora and others after him, that as we go through the Megillah, and we see sometimes a reference to Shushan, or Ha'ir Shushan, the city Shushan, and other times a reference to Shushan HaBira, those are not two ways of saying the same thing. Shushan and Shushan HaBira are not exactly the same place. Shushan is the city of Shushan. Shushan HaBira is actually a capital city within Shushan. And not that many people make it into Shushan HaBira. That's why it's a chiddush. The pasuk says in Perek Beis, Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan HaBira. There was a Jew who made it into Shushan HaBira. And that's why there are certain things that he will find out about, that Haman is trying to keep it from him. But what Mordechai does know, interestingly, it seems to be a side point, but that's Haman offered to pay an enormous amount of money. Aseret alafim kikar kesef, even without knowing the exchange rate, it sounds like a lot. It's a lot. Aseret alafim kikar kesef, eshkol ayidei osa hamalocha. He was prepared to give that money to Ahasuerus in order to smooth the way for his plan to go through. And you mention a sum like that, people are going to hear about it. And the irony is that Ahasuerus refused the money. He said, you can keep it. You can keep the money. But the very fact, just any set of ears that heard Aseret HaSelafim Kikar Kesef would tell, and even without knowing what it's about something very big. And also, it's about something that probably is not so much in Ahasuerus' interest as it is in Haman's interest. Otherwise, why on earth would Haman offer to pay for it in order to happen? If it's really true that it's for the, in the interest of the crown, so then it should, like most laws that are interested in the crown, you have to pay for them to happen. You just have to say something that makes sense and the king will ratify it. But it sounds like it's Haman realizes that Ahasuerus wouldn't, or he thought Ahasuerus wouldn't do this if he didn't offer to pay the money. Mordechai therefore knows three things. The three things are, number one, he knows a decree has gone out. He's only seen what everyone else has seen, and that is on the 13th, in 11 months' time, Pesach now, or the era Pesach, 11 months' time, Liyos Asid and Liyom Hazeh. It didn't say what, but it's going to be something. He also knows that Haman has paid a lot of money, which means he knows it's not something good. It's something that Haman wants that Ahasuerus wouldn't naturally want, and it will involve the entire nation. And finally, of course, the information that he knows is not just that he knows, it's what he's experienced. His recent confrontation with Haman, which has set Haman on edge, and therefore you put all that together, and Haman has reacted very badly to Mordechai, offered a great deal of money to Ahasuerus, and sent out messages that everyone's got to be ready for something. Mordechai puts that all together. I mean, you put two and two together, or in this case, you put one and one and 10,000 talents of silver together, and it's quite clear to him what exactly Haman has in store. And interestingly, Mordechai was not the only person who knew this. In Shushan, he's the only one because everyone else is keeping quiet. However, in the outlying states, there were certain people who also received this news. How so? There were certain Jews who received this news. Because you're entrusting the officials of every state to keep it a secret. Well, then, as now, for everyone to keep a secret is not a simple business. And therefore, there were places where word got out. It wasn't official and no one could prove it, but people heard things. Those that had a friend who knew someone who worked by the minister, people heard things. And therefore, whereas at large, people were still in the dark and confused, but there were certain people who actually had heard more than that, and they were more than confused. They were actually in full-blown mourning. And that's why, if we go back to Pasuk Gimel, Uvacha Medina Umedina, in every state, Mekom Asher Dvar HaMelech V'daso Magia, Evel Gadol LaYehudin. Any place where the word of the king and his edict has reached, there was mourning for the Jewish people. We asked the question, what's the word of the king? What's the edict of the king? The edict of the king is what had formerly gone out. Lihyos asidim leyom hazeh. Everyone has to be ready. That's the das. Lina saying das lechol amim lihyos asidim leyom hazeh. The dvar hamelech are the words that accompanied, which were not in the formal edict. Those that had just received the das hamelech were confused. But those who had received Dvar HaMelech V'daso, they knew the content and they knew the purpose of everyone being ready, which wasn't everyone by any means, Evel Gadol LaYehudim. And that's why when Esther, although we're moving ahead and we will come back, but as Esther sends a message to Mordechai to find out, so Mordechai, if we look at Pasuk Zion, Esther wants to know, what is Mordechai in mourning about? What's he causing such a fuss about? And Pasuk Zion reads, Vayagedla Mordechai eskol asher karahu. Mordechai told her everything that happened to him, which is interesting, because as far as we understand, nothing's happened to him. It's not about what's happened to you, it's about what's going to happen to the Jewish people. So why does Mordechai begin by saying everything that happened to him? That's number one. Number two, Pasuk Zion says, Ves Parshas HaKesef, and what about the whole affair with the money, Asher Amar Haman Lishkol Al Ginzei HaMelech, that Haman offered to pay in? That's the second thing. And the third thing is in Pasuk Ches, Ves Pashegen Ksav Hadas Asher Nitan B'Shushan, the edict that was released in Shushan, says Mordechai, a little early, sorry, Lahashmidam is to destroy them. He showed her that. In other words, he only has the copy of the edict that everybody else has, which is to be ready. But basically here, Mordechai is presenting all of his evidence. Number one, Kol Asher Karahu, everything that happened to him. What happened to him? Meaning his confrontation with Haman. That's number one. Number two, Parsha Sakesef. The day later, Haman is offering a lot of money to Ahasuerus, and then put all that together with this Pashegan Ksavadas, and you understand it's Lashmidam. He gave all of that to the messenger to bring back to Esther to convince her that she needs to mobilize. And so, let's move back now to Pasuk Beis, because here is Mordechai, and he needs to speak to Esther. Vayavo ad lifnei shar hamelach. So he comes just until Esther's in the palace, just until the gate of the king. Ki ein lavo el shar hamelach b'lvush sak. He's wearing sackcloth. You can't do that. You can't actually enter past the king's gate wearing clothing like that. Oh. The interesting thing about this situation, when we think about it, is that why does he even approach the gate? He approaches the gate because he needs to speak to Esther as a matter of utmost urgency. There's just one thing stopping him, and that is he's wearing sackcloth. So he can't actually speak to her, except he's the one that put the sackcloth on. And so, therefore, he's the one who's stopping himself from actually just going and talking to Esther. Which means the easiest way to do this now is just to take the sackcloth off and dress normally for a little bit, and then go and speak to Esther, which he doesn't do. He's stuck. But why is he stuck? He made himself stuck. Except the point is, Yosef Lekach, here we see, and it will really guide us through the perek here, that Mordechai understands that there are two planes, there are two tracks of action in terms of response to Haman's plan. The one is political, that is to say, to intervene, to intercede with Ahasuerus and ask him to do something about it. I mean, that's ultimately what they're looking to do. But that's temporal. I mean, that's political. On the other hand, there's another reaction, and that reaction really deals with the root of the problem. Haman and Ahasuerus are symptoms of the problem, but the root of the problem is the Jewish people must have done something wrong, and the response to that is not asking the right person at the right time to do the right thing, but it's about doing tshuva. And what Mordechai wishes to emphasize here is that of those two ways of responding, he is not prepared to give priority to the temporal path, to the political path, over the religious one, because that's the symptom and not the cause. And therefore, Mordechai says, what must happen is the sackcloth, which represents tshuva and all of that, and that cannot be removed. If I'm stuck because I can't get past the king's gate in this, so be it. We'll find another way to work it out. But that priority needs to be given to the tshuva here. Everything else needs to revolve around that. And in fact, this also gives us a deeper understanding as to Esther's response, which is in Pasuk Dalet, where it says, Vatavona, Naros Esther Besariseha Vayagidula. So her girls came and told her, Mordechai is causing a ruckus at the gate. Vatishachal HaMalka Me'od. She was very distressed. So Vatishlach Begodim Lalbishas Mordechai. So she sent clothes to dress Mordechai. Incidentally, I'm not exactly sure what clothes she had and whether they were exactly Mordechai's norm. And she's in the palace, whatever men's clothing was there in the palace is hardly the norm for Mordechai, but nonetheless, although he is a nobleman and therefore, okay. Ula sir sakom me'alav, and to remove the sackcloth below kibel, but he didn't accept it. And again, the simple way of relating to this pasuk is that Mordechai is causing a great deal of upset, and therefore Esther sends clothes that he shouldn't wear the sackcloth, with that the whole thing will be finished, and he didn't accept. But that's not the point. The point is Esther surmises that if he's here, he's here to talk to her, but he can't go any further because he's wearing the sackcloth. And therefore, when she sends clothes to give to him, she's not saying, don't bother with the sackcloth and stop all of that because that's just causing trouble. She's saying, I understand something is a foot. But if you're going to talk to me, so you're going to need this clothing to come and talk to me. And then when you finish, you can go back and put on the sackcloth again. So just for a few moments to be wearing this clothing. And Loki Bell, Mordechai doesn't accept. Because Mordechai, even for a few moments, does not wish to relinquish what he considers to be the primary response here. And he's going to need to get, and it will happen through different channels. And the person who is now the go-between is someone called Hasach. And that's in Pasuk Hey, Vatikra Esther laHasach, Misarisei HaMelech. And who is Hasach? Actually, Chazal tell us, Hasach is none other than Daniel. So he is a very trusted person, and he's the one that ferries the messages. Now, again, with an eye on the finer points of Parshanut, so we should note that in total, there will be three exchanges between Mordechai and Esther. Three times that Esther sends someone to Mordechai. Interestingly, each of them will be introduced in a somewhat different way. Thus, for example, if we begin in Pasuk Hey, which is where we are, the Pasuk of Hasach. So the Pasuk says, Vatikra Esther laHasach, Vatitzavehu al Mordechai. Vatitzavehu al Mordechai. She commands him, seemingly al Mordechai, concerning Mordechai. That's an interesting expression. Especially when Mordechai has given the message, and then Esther says what she wants to say again in Pasuk Yud. The second time she sends the Pasuk Yud, still Hasach. Vatomer Esther Lasach, Vatatzavehu El Mordechai. So that's interesting, because the first communication is referred to as Al Mordechai, the second as El Mordechai. It's also important to note that in Pasuk Yud Beis, that second, if we keep track of things, Pasuk Yud Beis, as the second message is communicated to Mordechai, it says, Vayagidu leMordechai esdivrei Esther. And they told Mordechai Esther's words. So the question is, who's they? Where do they come in? Right? It's Hasach. He's the one. So how did we get from, she said Hasach batzaveyu el Mordechai, and it sounds like Hasach didn't even say anything to him. Who said whatever it was to him? They did, whoever they are. Who are they, and how did they get involved here? That's the second message. And finally, in Pasuk Tes Vav, we find Vatomer Esther lehashiv el Mordechai. Esther says to reply to Mordechai. So this, with the whole idea of the fast, etc. So this is a very interesting situation. Again, if we have them in front of us, messages 1, 2, and 3. The first is Vatitzavehu al Mordechai. The second is Vatitzavehu el Mordechai. And the third is Lahashiv el Mordechai. So what are we to make of this? Well, says Yosef Lekach, initially, as we mentioned, Esther understands that Mordechai, he has something that he wants to tell her. Clearly, otherwise he wouldn't have come to the palace. He wouldn't have come near the palace, so clearly he wants to talk to her. And moreover, as we said, that's why she sent him the normal clothing, so that he should be able to, yes, talk to her. But he didn't accept, and he didn't accept because he doesn't want to relinquish the sackcloth. However, what's also interesting is the people that came to him, because really the first, when you think about it, the first thing that communication to Mordechai was those that went out with the clothes. Because how do they know that he's not accepting? Because they offered and he didn't accept. So on the one hand, he's not accepted to change into normal clothes. But on the other hand, it's also very interesting that would have been actually the perfect opportunity to actually tell them what it's about. Because if he wants Esther to know. As if to say, Mordechai should have responded, I'm not accepting the clothing. However, now that you're here, and I can't be tested, you're going to go back to her, so tell her what the whole situation is about. Which he didn't. Which is now very intriguing for Esther, because that would have been a perfect opportunity to let her know Mazev al-Mazev, right? What's going on? And that's why Esther is actually at this stage, if we follow the finer points here, Esther actually at this stage is no longer convinced that Mordechai actually wants to tell her what it's about, because he had an opportunity with those that offered him the clothing to relay the message, and he didn't take it. So it could be that it could be that he doesn't want to tell her. But Esther certainly wants to know. And that's why she chooses at this stage her most trusted confidant, Hasach. And what is Hasach's job? Hasach's job is basically to go and talk to Mordechai and try and find out what it's all about. She's not assuming that Mordechai is going to tell him. He needs someone as wise as Hasach to get it out of him. And that is why the first time Hasach is sent to Mordechai, the expression used is Batitzavehu al Mordechai, concerning Mordechai. It's not a direct message to Mordechai to say, tell me what happened, but she's saying to Hasach, I'm giving you this mission concerning Mordechai. I want you to find out what it's about, even if he's not going to tell you. You'll be able to find out. Interesting. However, Mordechai, as soon as Hasach approaches him, tells him everything. Which is interesting, because why did you tell Hasach? Why didn't you tell those other people? Except the point is, Mordechai was waiting for someone like Hasach, who is the most trusted person. He knows that Esther will send him someone like that. That's the type of person he's waited for to be able to talk to him. And therefore he has no problem actually telling Hasach exactly what happened. And that's Pasuk Zayin, Kol Asher Karahu. He tells Parshas HaKesev, Hasach could be entrusted to bring all of that to Esther. And moreover, not only is that the situation, but also in the end of Pasuk Ches, Mordechai has his directive. And that is, you have to intervene with the king. In the end of Pasuk Ches, Latzavos aleha, to command her, Lavo lamelech lischanino, ulavakesh milfanav alama, you have to intercede for your people. That is the message. Now, Esther does not think it's a good idea. And therefore she sends the message back. And the message of Esther is, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, as it reads, Kol avdei hamelech, v'am medinos hamelech, all the servants of the king, everyone, everywhere, in all the states of the king, Yodim, they know. This is known. Asher kol ish v'isha, asher yavo lamelech, elachotzer apnimis, anyone who approaches the king to the inner courtyard, asher lo yikarei, not having been summoned, achas doso lahomis. That's the law. He's killed straight away. Levad me'asher shidlo amelech eshavit hazahav v'chaya. Unless the king extends the scepter, in which case he can live. V'ani lo nikreisi levo al amelech ze shloshim yo. And I haven't been called to him for 30 days. What does Esther mean by all of this? Presumably the point is, if I go, it will be dangerous. But she introduces it in a much more wordy way. She says, everyone, all his servants in every province, everybody knows that any man or woman that approaches him, what does she mean by that? But rather, says Yosef Lekha, she means that it's almost impossible, it is virtually impossible that this plan will succeed. Not only because it's dangerous, but because the only way that it could work is somehow if Achashverosh gives her this clemency, he holds out the scepter, and then her way is clear to intercede for her people. However, says Esther, there's nothing to rely on here, because as much as Achashverosh loves Esther, but he also loved Vashti, but she defied him publicly, and he killed her. So that's the way Achashverosh works. And therefore, says Esther, the thing about this rule, this you can't come to the king unannounced rule, is everyone knows. This isn't something that I can claim that I didn't know. Everyone knows. And because everyone everywhere knows, so as soon as I approach, I am knowingly violating a rule of the king that everyone knows. I mean, that in his mind will be tantamount to rebellion, to a mutiny. It will be another Vashti. And Esther and Ahasuerus, as we know, is paranoid from the time of Vashti that whoever he marries should never start up with him in that way. He deliberately chose someone who would always be obedient, etc. And therefore he's hypersensitive to anything that he senses as someone getting perhaps above her position. And therefore, says Esther, I mean, it has all the trappings of just rebelling against him to violate such a well-known law. Interestingly, that law itself, according to some Mefarshim, I mean, it's quite a harsh law. A court policy: anyone who turns up unannounced is killed. I mean, that's rather extreme. So where does that come from? But this law itself is part of another paranoia of Ahasuerus, as of the episode with Bigtan and Teresh. Bigtan and Teresh were part of his inner circle, and they tried to kill him. And at this point, Ahasuerus said, "So I don't trust anyone." Which means, if anyone turns up unannounced, that's just another Bigtan and Teresh. I mean, what else could they be there for if not to kill me? What a way to live. He's the king, but he's trapped in the palace. And therefore, he's not taking any chances. They may look nice. I may know them. They're unannounced. That's another Bigtan and Teresh waiting to happen. Kill them first. Ask them questions later on. And moreover, says Esther, not only am I practically guaranteed to be killed, but the best case scenario is that I'll be saved if he extends the scepter, which is great, except if I'll be saved, then that itself is an act of such unusual mercy on the king's behalf, I won't be in a position that I'll be able to ask for anything else, because I will need to express all of my gratitude, just the fact that he didn't kill me. I won't be in a position of strength to request anything. So the best possible outcome of this scenario is that he won't kill me, and I have to spend the rest of the evening thanking him for not killing me. But more than that, I won't be able to say. I'll have no leverage. I'll have no leeway. And add to that the fact, says Esther, that I haven't been called for 30 days, which means it's going to be any day now. And therefore, all of the trouble that we're asking for could be avoided if we just wait a few days. That is the subtotal of Esther's message. Now, however, says Yosef Lekach, Esther is well aware, as much as she truly believes everything she says, she's well aware that this may be interpreted by Mordechai as her shirking her responsibility, in a sense, as if to say, avoiding what really she knows she should be doing. And it's for that reason that she actually arranged that this message about everybody knows and Esther hasn't been called, etc., that Hasach should not communicate this message directly to Mordechai. He shouldn't think that it came from her, because Esther says that everybody knows, and Mordechai will say, because Esther doesn't want to go. And therefore, the phrase used is Vatetzaveihu El Mordechai. This is the second shlichus. Vatetzaveihu El Mordechai means get this message to Mordechai, but you're not the one that's going to give it to him. He should know it came from me. But how is it going to work? It's going to have to be another couple of people who will say they overheard what was happening. Well-wishers, people that know the situation, they'll come to Mordechai and speak to him. We know, we overheard, we understand what you're planning. But however, everybody knows she can't really do that, and it's been 30 days anyway. That was what Esther, she was looking to, in a sense, becloud the source of this information to Mordechai. And it's for that reason that Pasuk Yud Beis, as this message communicated to Mordechai, says, "Vayagidu le Mordechai." Esther. They told Mordechai. And our question is, who are they? There is no they. It's Hasach. He's a he. Why does it say Vayagidu? The point is, these were the people that Hasach prepped. They would be the ones who then approached Mordechai and said, we overheard, etc. But you know, it's not such a good idea. That was how Vatetzaveihu El Mordechai translated into Vayagidu Le Mordechai. It wasn't Hasach here talking. However, Mordechai discerns rather rapidly that the message really is coming from Esther, and he sends back quite a harsh message. That's the truth. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer Mordechai, he's not accepting her deferral. Vayomer Mordechai Lashiv El Esther, he says, go and tell Esther, Al Tadami Ben Avshech Li Malei Beis HaMelech Mikol HaYehudim. Don't think that you will be saved. Ki Macharesh Tacharish Yivayis Ados, Revach Vatzala Yamud LaYehudim Mimokam Acher, Va'atu Beis Avich Tovedu. If you're silent, if you don't act right now, so then salvation will come from somewhere else, but that will be the end of you and your father's house. It's very dire. Especially as, from a certain point of view, Esther's words, if we may say, make a great deal of sense. It's extremely dangerous with very little hope of success now. If you wait a few days, there's much more hope for success in terms of the way things work. And moreover, the actual date, D-Day, is 11 months away. So it's not going to happen in the next 3 days. And Mordechai does not accept. But why does Mordechai not accept something that is perfectly reasonable? That is the question. And really this touches upon one of the major themes in the Megillah. It's the very same reason that Mordechai does not take the normal route of getting to Esther, but talking to her directly, removing the sackcloth. As if to say, Mordechai says the ikur here has to be tshuva, and moreover, as much as in the end it will involve some type of intervention, primacy and priority cannot be given to politically what's the best way to intervene. And the reason why is because ultimately what got the Jewish people into this situation in the first place was that they placed primacy on how to get ahead politically with Ahasuerus, which took the form of a couple of things. As the Gemara will read in just a few moments, there are two things that are identified. Number one is the fact that they bow down, or this is already way back into the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. And although the Gemara emphasizes that they didn't do it for the sake of Avodah Zarah, obviously, chas v'chalila, nonetheless, they understood that this is the way to get ahead in Bavel. And therefore, this is the path that we need to take. Moreover, attending the Suda of Ahasuerus, which is the second thing, is not merely, quote-unquote, eating things that they shouldn't be eating, etc. and so forth. But it's a statement about, now we're in Persia, this is the way to get ahead. It's not me. There's certain things that are very unkosher about it, but if the Jewish people will succeed, they're going to have to be visiting places like this. And really, therefore, it was the mindset that accompanied. Obviously, one needs to do hishtadlus, but to place that in the forefront and maybe Torah considerations at the back, that shift in mindset is really the root of the problem. And indeed, this, according to many Mefarshim, is the explanation of the rather enigmatic but well-known statement of the Gemara, Haman min haTorah minayin, the Gemara asked in Maseches Chulin, Daf Kuf Lamed Tes, where is the allusion to Haman in the Torah? And the allusion is in the words, Hamin ha'etz hazeh, in Parshas Bereishis, when Adam and Chava eat from the Eitz Hadas, Hashem says, Hamin ha'etz hazeh, you ate from that tree? And the Gemara clearly is connecting the Hamin of the Eitz Hadas to Haman, and there's Haman. Except what's Haman got to do with any of this? But the point is that the roots, really, of what empowered Haman in the Purim story begin with the Eitz Hadas. The Eitz Hadas is the first time in history, it's the first day in human history, the first time in history where basically a human being took the decision that they would be better equipped to chart a successful path for themselves, even more than the one given to them by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says, all the trees are good for you except for that one. And somehow Chava and Adam, through a bit of persuasion with the Nachash, and obviously it's very more complex than that, but they reached a state where they saw that this is being a better path for them. And that was the first break. They parted ways, really, from the Eitz HaChaim and moved in towards the Eitz Hadas. And they have their own ideas, better ideas even. That's the Yetzirah of the Eitz Hadas. The person feels he has a better idea as to how to succeed. The grotesque result of that, the logical conclusion of that at its most extreme, is Haman. Because Haman has his own ideas about how the Jewish people, what should be with them. They should cease to exist. And the instigation of Haman is really the Jewish people buying into, again, the Chet Eitz Hadas. As soon as they have their own ideas for success, other people have their ideas about the Jewish people. And it's for this reason that Mordechai really initiates a very radical, anti-politically correct, if we could use the expression, anti-politically, what is the best way forward here in pure political terms, because to do so would be essentially to perpetuate the mindset of the problem, and therefore Mordechai really demands, if we know about it now, we have to act now, we'll rely on mercy from heaven, and to start thinking, well, you know, politically in terms of the climate, and if I wait a few days, and it's really not such a good idea now, that's really perpetuating the problem. Moreover, there is specific relevance to Esther personally or familially. For Mordechai does say, if you are inactive at this time, at uveis avich tavedu, you and your father's house will be lost. What's her father's house got to do with it? And moreover, isn't it true that her father's house is Mordechai's father's house? They're related. They're uncle and niece. But the point is, as Mefarshim say, and it's a fascinating element within the story here, a lot of what Esther was able to do here was to be given the opportunity to rectify the mistake of her ancestor, and that is Shaul. They're Ishimini from the tribe of Benjamin, they're descended from Shaul. And really, one of the mistakes of Shaul HaMelech is that he embarked on such a course with reference to Amalek, with reference to the king Agag. They destroyed all of Amalek, except they left the animals over, with that as repercussions. He spared Agag, who then sired a child before he was able to be killed, and from there came. Why did Shaul do this? Shaul also, in his way, we can't judge, but just to try and understand, Shaul, in his way, also felt, as much he'd been given explicit instructions by Shmuel, that everyone has to be destroyed, everything has to be destroyed, certainly the king, he felt it would be better to leave the king alive. It would be better to leave the animals alive. They can even become korbanos. Yeah, that's what he says. To bring them as a zevach. L'Hashem Elokecha. And from a certain point of view, a significant point of view, he'd missed the point. And from that, Amalek continued. And therefore, the installment of Esther into such a powerful position is not only to help the Jewish people, but it's to help rectify the mistake of Shaul. And that's why the formula with which Esther was to be instated, in Memuchan's words, Vashti should be killed, Umalchusa yitena melech liru'usa hatorva mimena. She's to be deposed, the malchus would be given to her fellow who is better than her. That's actually an echo of words that were said to Shaul. Shmuel said to him, you've been deposed from the kingship and it will be given lereyecha hatov mimcha. And therefore, Mordechai says, there's a great deal at stake here, not only for the Jewish people, which is plenty, but also for you personally, because you have the ability now to rectify, in this chapter of our confrontation with Amalek, to rectify the mistake of Beis Avicha. If not, if you wait for the right time to do the right thing in terms of political climate, you're continuing that mistake that was made by Shaul. And there is another point, but so far, but that's a very, very important point of this parak and of the Megillah generally. Because Mordechai does say to her, in addition to saying, don't wait, he says, don't think that you will escape. Which really makes it sound like Esther was just protecting herself. It's a very harsh thing to say. She thought she'd escape. He said, no, you have to get involved because you're also in danger. As if to say, if she wasn't in danger, she wouldn't get involved. That's what it means. But rather, as Mefarshim point out, there's another element here. Esther is married to Ahasuerus. Every time she meets Ahasuerus, it involves physical intimacy. Now, every single time until now, it's only been when she's called, which is known as onus. Onus means it's beyond her control. It's not really at her instigation. It's not at her initiative. And although, of course, what's at stake is in the area of physical relations, which is Yehareg Val Yavor, it's more complicated than that, and there's room to say, as the Nevi Yehuda points out, that perhaps in order to save the entire Jewish people, maybe that things are different. However, this is the first time that if Esther goes, she will be going of her own volition, and she knows that it will involve intimacy with Achashverosh, but which is an Avera. But you can say, but it's for a good cause. But for whose good cause? In other words, it's to save the Jewish people, which is, of course, the greatest cause. But in a sense, as long as she is not in danger, she isn't really acting in this way out of her own pikuach nefesh. And therefore, she may have misgivings in that respect, as if to say, there is a principle in Talmud. Ein omrim la'adam chatei bishpil sheyizka chaverka. You do not tell one person to do a sin, so the other person will benefit. But seemingly, that's what's happening here. And therefore, in order to disavow Esther such a notion, and actually to make it easier for her, Mordechai makes it clear to her that she is ultimately is in as much danger from Haman as everyone else. That's important for her to know, because in a sense, it will make it easier for her to understand that what she's about to do is fully justified in protecting herself as well as everyone else. And this is the message that Mordechai sends back to Esther. And at that point, what's very interesting, once all of this has been made very clear to Esther by Mordechai, it's amazing to watch, as Mefarshim point out, in a sense, the relationship between Mordechai and Esther. Esther is 100% listening to Mordechai until this stage. And when he says this is what she has to do, and tells her that she has to do it, 100% she has to do it. But what's fascinating is, from this point onwards, it's really Esther who then is in charge, so to speak. She's the one that now, once she's been convinced of what has to be done, she then starts issuing orders to Mordechai as to how to do it. And Mordechai does it. As if to say, Mordechai and Esther are both obviously working for the same cause, which means when Mordechai is convinced that he has to get this message to Esther, he will not take no for an answer, and Esther accepts that. But once she's accepted it, so she then says how things will happen, and Mordechai is just there to execute her orders. It's an amazing, it's 100% Lishem Shammai in that way. Mordechai never says to Esther, you know, don't you realize that I tell you what to do, but you don't tell me what to do? Not at all. He tells her what to do, and then as soon as she accepts it, she then tells him what to do, and he accepts it. It's an amazing thing to see that element here. And from this point to the end of the perek, Esther is the one who decides. And she says that it begins with a three-day fast. And if we have a look in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Leich kenosis kalehudim anim se'im b'shushan. V'tzumor alai, gather all the Jews in Shushan and fast for me. Atochlu v'atishtu shloshes yomim alai levayom, for 3 days. And we will also fast similarly. U'vechein abo ala melech ha'shelo kadas. And with that, I will approach the king. Now, it's very interesting. I think perhaps we may gloss over this point as we tell the story that the Esther basically decreed a fast. And who's meant to fast? Everyone. But actually, Esther says, go and tell all the Jews in Shushan. Now, there's Jews outside of Shushan. What about them? Do they also have to fast? Apparently, no. Esther specifies, Kenosis kol yehudim hanimtzaim b'Shushan. But the question is, why does she not decree the fast beyond Shushan? Well, the answer may be very practical, as the Vilna Gaon says, because time is of the essence. You can't start saying, you don't have the time to send out, what are you going to send out, runners, like Achashverosh did, to 127 Medinos? The whole thing could be over by the time the last person gets the message to start the fast in the first place, which means you need to work with the group that you have instant communication with, which is the Jews of Shushan. Beyond that, you can't wait for it. It could take weeks until the word gets to them. That's how the Vilna Gaon explains in a very straightforward manner. But there is another possibility. We mentioned briefly Baal Peh a few moments ago, the two primary problems that are identified as bringing about the problems with Haman. And the source of that is the Gemara in Maseches Megillah, and it's worthwhile just hearing a three or four lines from the Gemara to hear the way that it's expressed. In Maseches Megillah, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, it reads, Shalu Tamidim et Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. So Reb Shimon Ben Yochai's Tamidim asked him, Mipnei manis chayvu soneihem shel Yisrael shebeoso hador kloya. What was it that made, euphemistically, the enemies of Israel, meaning Israel, deserving of being destroyed in that generation? So Reb Shimon Ben Yochai, he responded, interestingly, Amar lehem, imuratem. You say, you give a reason. It's an interesting response from the Rebbe. Reason. Amrlo, so they did. So they had a reason, which is interesting because they asked in the first place. I guess they felt they wanted to hear the real reason or the Rebbe's reason. But they had their own thoughts. And they said, well, mipnei she'nehenu misidosa shel osa rasha, because they enjoyed themselves in the Suda of Achashverosh. That's our analysis. You asked, that's our answer. But then Rav Shimon ben Yochai had a kasha and said, well, you know, who went to the Suda? Just the people in Shushan. So how come the entire Jewish people were under threat of annihilation? Amar lehem im kein, shebe Shushan yehargu, shebe kol ha'olam kulam al yehargu. So then only the Jews of Shushan should be killed, because that's something that only Jews of Shushan did. So at that point, they gave up. They did tatamidim. They tried, and they had a kasha, and they got slogged up, and so they don't know. So amru lo emrata. So they say, okay, well, so then you say, because apparently we don't know. Amar lehem, mipnei sheishtachavu latzalem. It's from earlier on. It's from when really all the Jews in captivity in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, they bow down to that statue of Nebuchadnezzar, and the Gemara says, even though it wasn't Avodah Zarah, nonetheless, they shouldn't have done it, and etc. So if we would summarize really the give and take of that very important discussion, what was it all about? What brought on the whole threat of Haman? It sounds like there's one aborted reason. They thought that they were the right reason, but wasn't, because if it's about the Suda, it shouldn't have applied to everyone. And therefore, the real reason is they bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. However, there are certain Mefarshim who understand, Rashi among them, that actually the reason for the Suda, of the Suda, didn't go away. Achashverosh's party, it didn't go away. It's just not enough. Because, I mean, the point stands. That was only violated by the people in Shushan. Why is everyone under threat? So it's not enough to explain it, but it's still true. It is a problem. It didn't go away. It turns out, therefore, that actually the Jews of Shushan had more of a liability against them than everybody else. For everybody else, it was just, quote-unquote, bowing down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. But actually, the people of Shushan were liable on two counts. Number one, the Mishteh of Achashverosh, and number two, like everybody else, bowing down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. And therefore, says Rabbi Shmuel di Uzida, the author of the Sefer Medrash Shmuel, the famous Sefer Medrash Shmuel and Pirkei Avos, he also has a parish on Megillat Esther, he explains it's for that reason that the fast of Esther was only decreed only for the people in Shushan, because they were the only ones who needed to purge that aspect of wrongdoing. It was the people of Shushan that went to the Suda. They are the ones that need, therefore, to fast. For everybody else, they don't need to fast. They need to be involved in tefillah, of course. But the fast is specifically for Shushan, because the added indictment, food-related indictment, of going to Achashverosh's Suda is an issue that pertains to the people of Shushan specifically. And interestingly, says the Medrash Shmuel, who himself is very medactic in the psukim, that's why Esther says, it's very interesting, the phraseology. She says, go and get all the Yehudim of Shushan, v'tsumu alai, fast for me, v'al toklu v'tishtu, shloshes yomim, laila v'yom, don't eat and drink for 3 days. So the Reb Shmuel Diozida asked a simple shayla. Esther said, fast for me. What does a fast entail? Not eating and not drinking. So this is not the time to start explaining what fast means. She says, tsumu alai, fast for me. And don't eat and don't drink. That's what a fast is. I think everybody knows that. So what does she mean by adding the words Val Toklu Val Tishtu? She's already said to fast. It's a good shayla. Rather, says the Rabbi Shmuel, What she's saying is that this about eating and drinking, there's so many other aspects to a fast, especially a Tanis Tzibur, the shoes and the washing and etc. and so forth. But really what Esther is saying, I'm saying Sumo Alai. And by that I mean specifically don't eat and drink, because that's where the problematic area is. So she's actually qualifying the fast as she adds those words. And it turns out very interestingly that the people of Shushan, in a sense, had their own story within a story. In the time of Esther, as if to say, beginning from the problem itself, they had an additional problem that no one else had. Namely, they went to Ahasuerus's party, which wasn't true for others, which means that their way of rectifying it included something that nobody else had, namely the 3-day fast. And therefore, that follows through, because they're on the one hand, their problem was deeper, but then their tshuva was deeper, and that means that their in a sense, confrontation with Amalek was more extensive, because it's in Shushan that they were able to have that extra day. And ultimately, the unique sub-story of the people of Shushan is reflected in the festival of Purim itself, because they have their separate day for Purim at Kedei Kach. So it's very interesting to see how this element follows through really in all stages of the story, from the difficult times until the celebratory times. It's worthwhile mentioning, just in conclusion, a wonderful comment of the Bina Le'itim, Rabbi Azariah Figo, Fejo, who's one of the Darshanim of the 1500s. Esther says, gather everyone together, but sumo alai, something we've mentioned in the past, well worth reflecting on, certainly in Purim. But sumo alai, she says, fast for me. What's the meaning of those words? The background to a lot of the trouble the Jewish people found themselves in was that, as Haman himself puts it, Yeshno amechad, mefuzar u'mefurad bein ha'amim, scattered and separate. And what does it mean, scattered and separate? Scattered is separate. What's the difference between mefuzar and mefurad? Says Rabbi Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz in his Perish Manos Halevi, mefuzar means geographically scattered. Mefurad means emotionally separate. They've lost a sense of connectedness with each other. And Haman mentions it because if that's the case, they are vulnerable to the machinations of their enemies. When Jewish people are separate from each other, they are at risk. And Haman knew it, and Esther knows it, and that's why she says, Lech kenosis kol ha'yehudim, you need to gather them together. They need to get together. And not only do they need to get together, they need to fast, and she makes an amazing request, Butsumu alai. Fast for me. Why is that such a big request? Because they're all in trouble. They're all in danger of annihilation. Presumably, if a person's fasting, they're fasting for that. And Esther asked them for this gesture, to set aside your own danger at this time and fast because someone else is in danger. Because that's the beginning of the way back, to have someone else's danger in mind, not just your own. And sumo alai. And she says, Gamani v'narosai atzum kain. Me and my girls, we will fast kain. Similarly how? We will also be fasting for you, for your troubles, not for our troubles. And that is the full level of togetherness that's required. It's not just everyone's doing the same thing, but people have other people's interests at heart. And indeed, that also is something which becomes enshrined in the mitzvahs of Purim. The mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is purely a display. When you think about it, I'm not sure people rely on the Mishloach Manos for sustenance, but every time we get Mishloach Manos, it's a gesture, as the Manos Halevi says. And that mitzvah now is a halachic reflection of the type of having someone else in mind. It goes such a long way. And that's what Esther demands. Commands Mordechai, and Mordechai observes Esther's command. The final pasuk says, "Vayavor Mordechai." Mordechai passes over. Vayas kechol asher tzivsa alav Esther. He did everything Esther commanded him, because once he's given her the mandate, she gives him the instructions, and Mordechai follows them out. The word "Vayavor Mordechai." Interestingly, the Gemara states, explains "Vayavor Mordechai" that he passed over, that's what it means. But where is he passing over? Says the Gemara, Sha'avar Arkasa Demaya. Akva the Maya, he passed over a stream of water. Except why is there a stream of water? Says Rupa Margolius, back to our earlier point, this is the stream that divides Shushanabira from Shushan. He's been talking to Esther. He's in the city within the city. But she told to go out to greater Shushan. There's a stream, a moat, actually, that's divided. And in fact, the archaeological digs where they surmise that Ahasuerus's palace was actually showed that there was a city surrounded by such a moat. That's the Arkava Demaya that Mordechai passes over. And then the second parish of the Gemara, Vayavar Mordechai, is actually from the word Aveira in the sense of violation. What's being violated? Pesach. No one's eating matzah and maror because they're all fasting. There was a Hara'as Sha'a. The fast superseded the halachas of Pesach. The story of Purim took place on Pesach. And as the Medrash explains, if there's no Jewish people, there's no matzah and maror anyway. And therefore this took precedence. And as others explain, if there's no Purim, there's no Pesach. If the Jewish people don't continue, so celebrating the beginnings, if there's no continuation, also is flawed. Ultimately, therefore, that one Seder was not observed by everyone, but the result is all the Sedarim that come from that point onwards. That was the Sanhedrin decision of Mordechai to do so, and that brings our discussions of Perek Daled to a conclusion. Mitzvah Hashem will carry on with matters relating to Purim next week. We'll leave it there.